The Israel Report with Rolly Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
All right, so Rolene, what is going on? Are you okay to do the Israel Report as a matter of interest? All right. Okay. So let's take a look at some of the stories that we're covering. Rolene, you with us?
I'm with you.
All right. So let's just talk about this Palestinian revealing PA torture to the Jerusalem Post.
Yes, I think we do need to talk about this because, strangely enough, this is a story that's only really made the Jerusalem Post, and some of the accounts coming out of this are quite horrific. We have stories of people being scalded with water, being interrogated, being taken out for torture, being forcibly removed from their homes. And this is an account given by Palestinians, and they say the Palestinian Authority is responsible for this.
But are we surprised? I mean, we don't think of the Palestinian Authority as a human rights organization.
Well, you and I are not surprised. But I think that Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, a lot of these organizations that often place the blame at Israel, they should be taking note of this and they should be taking action. It's utterly ridiculous when we've got Amnesty International talking about making sure that Israeli banks or people who do business with those in the so-called settlements are blacklisted, but they are deadly silent when we have issues where the Palestinian people are being tortured.
Do you think there's a sense that this is going to gather momentum?
I would like to think it would, but the cynic in me says probably not.
So
probably going to get squashed.
And you say at this point only the Jerusalem Post has picked up the story. Nobody else is even reporting it within Israel.
So far, only the Jerusalem Post.
Absolutely fascinating. It'll be very interesting to see because sometimes it does just take one story, but then it starts to gather momentum. There has been an acceptance, though, of the fact that the Palestinian Authority are not exactly known for due process of law and human rights. So hopefully that this will, with these real accounts of what has gone on, we would be in a situation that this can be investigated at least.
So we do know that it has made international attention that Hamas are known for their human rights transgressions. And it's no secret to many who watch the territories that if you are a political opponent or you're of a different sexual orientation, you are likely to meet your end falling off the top of a building. But very, very little is actually spoken about with regards to the Palestinian Authority because they are seen as the more moderate of the two and they defend de facto leaders of the Palestinian people.
Do you think that's because we want to see them as that?
I think it's. I think you raise a good point. I think people do want to see that there is some good on the other side. You know, we've spoken famously about if you need to negotiate, if you have a Palestinian Mandela, you need a de Klerk.
Right.
And I think when it comes to negotiating between Israel and the Palestinians, people really want their Mandela and de Klerk, and they're hoping that on the Palestinian side, the Palestinian Authority is that equivalent.
It's such an interesting question, Rolene. Have we seen over the last 70 years, have we ever seen any real possibility of a Palestinian Mandela?
That's the million shekel question. I don't think so. I think in order to be a Palestinian Mandela, you have to understand that you make peace with your enemies, and you have to understand that you're going to have to make very, very painful concessions.
It really is it's a fascinating thought that in 70 years we really haven't had strong leadership, positive leadership, that's going to come out and say, listen, let's try and recognize the state of Israel, whether we want to or not, but in order to give our people the best chance of living happy and contented lives.
Exactly.
Absolutely fascinating. Another deadline on Iranian nuke deal approaches. What's Trump going to do?
Well, this is a another one of those, in fact, I think this is more the billion-dollar question, what is Trump going to do? First of all, next week, all eyes are going to be on Trump, what he has to say at the UN General Assembly, which for us in Israel is our annual Super Bowl, because we're there watching what Bibi will say, what Abbas will say, what Rouhani from the Iranians will say, and of course now what Trump will say. Trump, during his election campaign, famously spoke about the Iranian deal being one he's going to absolutely tear up and relegate to the dustbins of history. But I think as the months or his presidency has progressed, he's realized that this is not a reality. Now, the American security establishment say that for him to tear up the contract would mean dire things for the American national security. Mm. For Israel, we don't want... we think the Iranian deal does need to be relegated to the dustbins of history. And Rouhani today is saying it doesn't matter if America pulls out. They will maintain their relations, their treaties with other major powers.
Absolutely fascinating. And it's interesting, again, that Trump did start off with a very, very clear on the Iranian deal, but the reality does prevail, unfortunately, and he does have to balance a lot of issues. Lieberman, on the ultra-Orthodox draft, all must enlist. Now, this is an issue that's gone on, obviously, for many, many years. It's the whole issue of the ultra-Orthodox and the army. We know that there's an immense amount of pressure on both sides. What is the latest?
Well, the latest is Lieberman, the defense minister, has said, sorry, but it's time for you to be conscripted. All 18-year-olds are conscripted to the army. Yair Lapid is lauding this as a major gain, a major win. And we will see if it will be able to be enforced. It's going to be very interesting because I don't know how well they're going to be able to enforce this with such opposition coming from the ultra-Orthodox party to conscription. In fact, at times it does even get violent.
But what's interesting to me is a lot of the issues that we've had previously at the Kotel were as a result of the ultra-Orthodox placing pressure on Netanyahu to renege on the deal that was made. They threatened to pull out of the coalition. Why should this be any different? Will he have the strength to withstand what's the counter-pressure from the ultra-Orthodox community?
Well, I think this is one we're going to have to wait and see. Personally, I think he will kowtow, although the issues around egalitarian prayer could have been a major wake-up call.
But yet this does seem to be continuing. What's also interesting to me is that there have been some inroads made. The Haredi units or ultra-Orthodox units within the IDF. So the IDF have found ways to incorporate the ultra-Orthodox community in a way that doesn't offend or least offends the lifestyle. It's interesting that there now seems to be a lot more aggression in terms of, or not aggression, but a lot more. It's a lot firmer the need or the push to get the ultra-Orthodox to be part of the army.
Well, again, this is the whole issue about concessions and the need to make concessions. And the army, I think, has done a lot to try and make sure that everybody is accommodated, that all factions are accommodated within the IDF. There does seem to be this last radical push to waver the conscription.
It's going to be a very, very fascinating one to watch. And I just wonder, you know, there definitely seems to be, it's on another subject, but it's part of it, is there definitely seems to be a push to move Netanyahu out of government and a time or a need for a new leader. And I just wonder what it's going to be that is going to break that camel's back.
Well, Netanyahu just in the last few days said he has never been stronger, he has never been more popular, and he's rallying his support base. He says he has no intention of relinquishing the prime ministership at the moment.
Going to be fascinating to see. Epic BDS fail. Tell us about it.
Well, Cornell University, which is New York-based,
and the Technion Haifa, which is one of our most illustrious universities, are pooling their resources to open up a campus in America. And this is quite fascinating. It's a fascinating model, especially when we see universities around the world, no names mentioned, UCT, who actually want to divest. And what this means is a pooling of resources, teachers, laboratories, and they'll be opening up a campus on the Cornell campus, which will be a joint effort. And this is a huge, huge win for Israel.
Absolutely fantastic. Indeed, very, very, very positive story. Rolene Marks, it's 5:20. Do you think you're going to be able to find wherever you're going?
I found where I'm going.
Oh, well, there we go. So whoever you are with, you're not going to take his head off, the poor bloke.
Please tell me I did not swear on air.
It's 5:20, Rolene Marks. You have a Shabbat Shalom. We'll send you the podcast, Rolene. But
very little one.
Exactly. This was the Israel report that never happened, and it wasn't brought to you by the Blue Agency.